So it is time for a conversation with John Orr. Good morning, everybody. I hope you have your thinking hats on. You've taken off your thought repellent hats to engage in the conversation today. The conversation should be a lively one. It certainly is one of interest to the people out there, working people, business owners, environmentalist people who value clean air, those who perhaps would like to see an avoidance of an extinction level event forecasted by some in the next 60 to 100 years. And that would be House Bill 2020. House Bill 2020 is before the Oregon legislature. Your elected representatives and those in this area are Tiffany Mitchell, recently elected for the first time to the state representative's position, and State Senator Betsy Johnson. And so this bill concerns you because it's wide-ranging, has many effects, and we're going to have our esteemed guest, Brian Kidder, who is the head of the Democratic Central Committee here in Clatsop County, to discuss things with me. So with that, we should probably go ahead and get started. Why don't you test on that microphone there, Brian?
Well, John, I hope you can hear me this morning. Do appreciate it. Let's try this microphone here.
I can hear you just fine. So, Brian, how are you?
Doing fine. Doing fine, John.
I want to thank you for coming on our broadcast again. We always enjoy your intelligent commentary. You're not a speck of cereal. It's just lean and right to the point.
A lean, mean opinion machine.
Yeah. Me, I got a little bit of bacon on the side, some fries, but it all tastes good, hopefully. So get right to it. What's the overview on House Bill 2020? What is it? What does it hope to do? What are the pros and cons? Go.
Well, 2020 is really designed to be an effort to look at greenhouse gas emissions and taxing the largest polluters in the state to help pay for cleanups, health care for people, all kinds of the issues that arise from the creation of greenhouse gases by those polluters.
Well, wait a minute. Is greenhouse gas real? Is climate change real because of man-made efforts?
You tell me. Are the summers here in Astoria different than they were 10, 15 years ago? Are the winters different? Yeah, it's real.
Not to be inappropriate, there was something poetic about that. But yeah, I think it's all pretty self-evident, but if somebody disagrees, I suppose they could give us a call, but the Oregon legislature, Brian, clearly is acting on the assumption and the knowledge, as supported by 99% of the global, of the earth scientists, that this is a significant problem. And so Oregon purports to, under Governor Brown, purports to be a leader in the nation in attacking this problem. Is that correct?
Yes. And Oregon has shown a lot of leadership in environmental issues. I believe they were the first in the nation to offer money back on your bottles. They've done a lot of things to be a leader.
Yeah, revolutionary land use planning, which we still have today.
And cool. And a lot of those changes all come with people who have their ox being gored by the change. And so that situation is here with House Bill 2020 as well. Industry is claiming that it's going to put them out of business. The proponents are claiming we need this to be able to have a cleaner environment and healthier environment for our citizens. And so there's probably a little truth in both. However, I'll just say this. My first job out of college was being the community relations person for a paper mill. And I can understand some of the issues related to the pollution associated with certain industries. And will it put them out of business? That's a common complaint that is made by industry about any regulatory change that comes around. The auto industry cried to the top of their lungs whenever the proposal was to put seatbelts in cars. Now, at the same time, is the pollution levels being created by heavy industry within the state needing this kind of taxation to bring them down? So, yeah, there's a big debate. In fact, you mentioned my association with the Democratic Party. There's a big debate within the party as the right thing to do. No one wants to see jobs go away. But at the same time, there has to be some deliberation and back and forth to set the priorities that we have as a state. And Oregon is a leader in environmental protection.
Yes, and It was clear to me, based on my training and education, that in the toolkit for modifying behavior by the government, tax policy is one of the primary, because you create you deter undesirable behavior, and just like tax credits or deductions encourage, incentivize behavior. This bill, it looks to me, though it is a bit overwhelming, purports to do both, you know, incentivize and reward alternative energy and sort of use, I guess it's cap and trade or some sort of penalty system for those polluters. And I guess they're going to be maybe able to trade credits. Are we going to be seeing that here in the state of Oregon, like in California?
You've mentioned to me that there's already 71 proposed amendments to this bill.
Yeah.
So everyone has their way of either seeking an exemption or setting the standards at a different level. That's what the debate is all about. And that's the great thing about democracy, is that everybody gets a chance to play in this. And there are a lot of folks wanting to play. It's not an easy issue by any stretch of the imagination. But I think the first thing is to go back to what you originally said. We have to recognize that there is an environmental problem with pollution that's causing changes to climate. What's the best way to address it? And if you can identify the heaviest polluters and address their behavior, that is a step. Do you address it by penalizing them to the point of extinction? No. But do you somehow incentivize them to be able to make the changes so that jobs can remain and the air can be cleaned at the same time, air and water can be cleaned at the same time? That's the battle that we're facing.
Well, let's make it local. I think in the earlier part of this month, Tiffany Mitchell had our newly elected House of Representatives representative wrote a column, and then she got some serious blowback from people aligned with or who are working at or once worked at the Wana Mill, saying that the profit margins, essentially, as I read it anyway, the profit margins at the mill due to competition and now with trade tariffs imposed by the Trump administration are getting exceedingly small, and this could push them over the edge. And they seem to really believe, and I would certainly invite the people that wrote that or are sympathetic to that point, really believe that this bill, House Bill 2020, will result in the closure of the Wana Mill and hundreds of jobs, which for a tax base, for family wage jobs, would be nothing short of a disaster. And so the question is, given that there will be pain, that you cannot modify behavior, you cannot change our addiction to fossil fuels overnight, that to get this desired change to save the planet, if you will, would that be too high of a price to pay?
Well, John, change can come incrementally, and our change can come in big swoops. Big swoops are the ones that folks have the most trouble with. And in the case of an industry that does have very narrow margins, profit margins, to remain viable, that's where there's a lot of sympathy for the position being taken, in particular by Wana or other larger industries. But there's also the saying that what gets measured is what gets done. And if there is an emphasis on reducing pollution levels across the board, then there is that opportunity to incentivize, if you want to call a tax an incentivization or whatever the right word is, there is that opportunity to have the discussion. And again, there are plenty of folks trying to amend this bill. The question becomes, does it become so watered down, no pun intended, that it accomplishes nothing? On top of this, that there will be some proposed gasoline taxes that come from this. It's not all just going to hit the heavy polluters. There are other things involved that will affect people that don't work at the Wana Mill in particular.
Yeah.
So that's something to consider as well. But then again, you want change, you have to do something to force the change.
Yes, yes. And one has seen this, sort of the fickle nature of corporations. I'm thinking of that air conditioning company in Indiana that says, well, if we don't get this tax break, we're going to close, and they get the tax break. And so they get a bump of cash, and it goes to the investors, and it goes to the CEOs, and they close anyway. And so one must take that with a grain of salt, because their motivation is not simply on behalf of the community, but also, and maybe primarily by law, to their investors. That said, I have a letter dated April 7th, 2019. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, callers, we're waiting for your input, your comments, your questions on House Bill 2020, the Clean Jobs Energy Bill that is rapidly going to become law here. And so your input or your questions are welcome, 503-325-0010. Do you think that the state of Oregon, through our elected representatives of the legislature, should take dramatic action to reduce greenhouse gases? Do you think it's so urgent that this really encompassing bill, which touches so many parts of life in Oregon, that it's time and we should be prepared to endure economic discomforts, pain, or even job losses? So give us your call if you agree that we should do whatever we can or whatever is necessary. And if you think it's a bad idea, or if you think it's going to cause you to lose your job, then we strongly encourage you to weigh in here. I called Betsy Johnson last night, and the governor's press secretary. I didn't actually get through, but Betsy, of course, did return my call. She's working long hours. So I want to get to this exhibit that was presented on April 7th to, I think it's the Energy and Environment Subcommittee, dated April 7th, and it's from the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and the author of it is Jim James. He's the executive director. But first, we have our first caller. This is a conversation with John Orr. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question?
Hi, John. I'm a Washingtonian, but of course this affects us. I've witnessed changes over the years in the rain patterns in the wintertime especially.
Yes.
But to get to my question, and I'm witnessing sea level rise in the country of Fiji.
Okay.
But my question about the 2020 bill is, what's the science behind it? Are there actually penalties for exceeding a certain concentration of CO or NO2 or, you know, the greenhouse gases? Or can you give an abstract as to what the cutoff points are and when the penalties begin? Is that determined with scientific evidence and by a scientific panel or?
Well, I would have to assume so, but if you looked at this bill, and it is accessible through the Oregon Legislative Information Service, there are targeted levels for greenhouse gas reductions. Uh-huh. There are penalties that are being worked out in the committees.
Any numbers? Because the problem is, as I see it, is we're climbing up a tree that's, you know, if the populace doesn't learn more about chemistry, we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. But to answer your question about the numbers, they do have numbers. It's possible they're moving targets. There's 71 amendments. And to answer your question, is it based in science? I would assume so, because this is a major undertaking. It's participating. Mm-hmm. It's having all the branches of government, of state government, probably affected, and many, if not most of them, involved. And these people tend to come from highly educated backgrounds. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe they have a bent or a bias of one way, of one sort or another. But if you actually meet and talk to people, particularly our elected representatives here in the state of Oregon, they really do try to get it right. They do their homework. They have lots of hearings, and they're more responsive to the local population, at least in most cases. But then, you know, that's sort of the challenge of leadership. Do you lead or do you follow? Is a elected representative just echo the dictates, kind of like Chuck Grassley in Iowa and, you know, Lindsey Graham in South Carolina? Or do they say, like Lincoln, you know, we need to go a little further. This is not going to be comfortable. We should pass the 13th Amendment. You know, so it's going to be interesting to watch it unfold. But I have no doubt that they can probably find documentary support for what's being proposed. But, you know, it's an input and output process, and it's underway. So let's see if we have another call. Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye.
So we'll wait for that light to get going, and because I'll be trying to read this or parts of this letter that will ensure that the phone will go off. So Jim James, executive director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, has filed this exhibit with the committee. It's working on House Bill 2020, the green, the clean energy jobs bill. And yeah, there it goes, never fails. Well, let me just point out what he says. House Bill 2020 must include a fuel tax credit for all forestry-related activities, including transporting wood fiber to be used to make wood products, and adopt measures to alleviate natural gas price increases for those who make products that already sequester carbon in wood products. And, okay, let's take that call because it's going off. This is a conversation with John Orr. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question? Okay, the light is on. Did they hang up? Okay, let's try it again.
Planetary consciousness.
Oh, I'm sorry, we just got you.
Going
Hello?
Back to Africa.
Can you start your comment or question? This is a conversation with John Orr. Go ahead.
Planetary consciousness is going back to Africa.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Exactly on the point. Did you have any comment or question specifically about the effort by the Oregon legislature to address the global warming situation? I'm going to take that to be a no, but thank you for that call. Brian.
So, John, in the first caller asked about what are the limits. I think that while I don't know what the specific, you know, tons per year limits will be on pollution. Their goal is to start out with a certain amount and incrementally tighten the amount of pollutants that would be allowed. And it's going to go after the top polluters in the state. It's not something that Mr. Dry Cleaner down the street is going to worry about unless he is just pouring tons of stuff into the drains, right? So it's going to focus on the larger polluters with a phased-in tightening of the approach. I believe that the goal is not only to curb the amount of pollution, but the effects of pollution. The proponents will say that it's going to help reduce health care costs in the state by, let me see if I can find my little note here, reduce health care costs by $2 billion within 9 years. So imagine cleaner air, cleaner water, and the effects that come from that. That's what the proponents are going to say.
Yeah. One aspect of this, and by the way, this is the conversation with John Orr, today's topic, the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. Are you for it? You're against it? Are you concerned about maybe some effects locally in terms of jobs? Are you thinking that the situation is dire and desperate? Give us a call with your comment or question, 503-325-0010. That's 325-0010. I'm also interested in sort of the energy industry, like the electrical and the gas companies, because they're, I guess, self-evidently big targets because they use fossil fuels. And so with that, this is an exhibit to the committee that's working on the law from the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. I just pulled it up right now. As the bill language is currently drafted, the COUs, it's an acronym standing for utilities, county, city-owned utilities, would, or that rely on the federal Columbia River power system, would be impacted by this. So the Rural Electric Cooperative asks that there be refinements made to House Bill 2020 and urge you to adopt this number 60 amendment submitted by Senator Kopp to provide a safety net for utilities that may soon exceed the bill's 25,000 metric ton threshold because of economic development. So here's where the rubber hits the road, is it economics versus environments? And so the energy companies are saying that there are going to be negative impacts on costs which may be passed along to utility payers from House Bill 2020. And then if you have communities that are struggling, like many of them that are fishing or logging communities or eastern Oregon communities, then imposing burdens on the cost of doing business in the energy bill could have adverse economic effects. This is a very ambitious bill, so if you have any comments or questions, please do so.
John, let's talk about the ambitiousness of this bill.
Yes.
Reality says that with so many special interests tugging at both directions, it's likely this thing could end up being on a voter referendum ballot at some point, because that same situation may happen with another topic, PERS, may happen with the legislature's inability to pass something. It could get challenged, and it ends up being on a ballot. So you may see down the road, maybe as early as November, an election related to paying for 2020 or paying for the cap and trade, the pollution reduction bill, paying for the PERS taxation plan that may come up. It's not uncommon for the legislators to just pass the buck and let the people decide directly through a ballot.
I don't think they're going to pass the buck, but that doesn't preclude, of course, anybody on PERS or this issue from bringing it to the voters. So you may be right. And this the last point made by this individual from the Rural Electric Cooperative, it's unsigned, says, this is the potential situation facing one of my members, Central Electric Cooperative, headquartered in Redmond, Oregon, which serves rapidly growing areas around Bend and Sisters, and has projected their emissions could cross 25,000 metric tons threshold. That's a threshold in which you get dinged or penalized for emissions, and has calculated their costs over the next 10 years without any allowances sought by amendments, yes, would be $7.3 million. Ultimately, this could lead to a rate increase, get this, folks, a rate increase, according to the Rural Electric Cooperative, for energy users, utility payers, if you will, of 25%, when also factoring in the expected rate increases from BPA. So that could raise some hackles. That could be for folks on low income or low wage earners. I think they are making provisions for addressing that through credits. What do you think, people out there? We've had one caller, but I realize this is a lot to grasp. But if you think we should pass this bill, we think we should do whatever it takes to limit greenhouse gases, then we need to know that. If you think it's all too much, it's too confusing, we're going too fast, that would be good to hear. And, our legislators need to hear from you as well. Okay, I think let's do a quick turn, unless you have some concluding comments on that topic, Brian.
Well, I think that, the opponents are going to decry the impact of intense regulation and that threatens their business. The proponents are going to say that, you know what, 10 other states have measures like this in place, and the dire consequences didn't come into play. Could be just big oil is rattling their chains to get what they want. So that's why I think that this is really an issue that may end up in the hands of the voters at some point.
Well, certainly scrutiny is called for, but as a practicing lawyer for 30 years, reading the amendments, it took me all morning just to read the amendments that have been filed since April 1st, and that it's complicated business. So hopefully our legislators have a good handle on it, and they're listening to constituents and weighing the choices. So it looks like we have a caller just before we switch gears. This is Conversation with John Orr. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question? Turn your radio down. You may be getting some feedback there, please.
No, it's not on.
Oh, okay.
I say we have to do everything we can to eliminate greenhouse gases. We're at a point where we're grasping at straws to see if we can save humanity, literally. And it's just starting to sink in with people that think a lot about these things that it's a chance that we might survive. It's not guaranteed. We may face a situation where there's literally a few thousand humans left in what would have been an unlivable zone, but it's all that's left. So I say we have to do everything. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much. There comes to mind from An Inconvenient Truth a graph that former Vice President Al Gore pointed to at a big conference, and he said that 2009 was the tipping point. And last year, 2 years ago, I heard we were at the tipping point, 2 to 3 years. Tipping point being that if we didn't dramatically reverse course and get back on greenhouse gas emissions frozen at some point in time, maybe a few years back, that we would basically be losing the battle and there would be a mass extinctions and the dislocations that we see now from coastal inundation, from hurricanes, from forest fires would be a drop in the bucket. Any thoughts?
In order to solve a big problem like this, we have to get people to recognize, A, there's a problem, and B, what are the major ways to address it? And right now it's still such a political hotbed that conservatives will claim that it's not real. The Earth goes through these cycles. Why are you penalizing humans for it? And the progressives are going to say, we've got to throw everything we have at it. And somewhere in the middle, as with everything, is where the reality will lie. However, your last caller makes a point to me that reminds me that if you want change to happen, you have to fight for it. You can't just read a book about it and say, oh, this is terrible. You have to fight for any change that you want, whichever direction you have. But I think that we have to come upon the realization of what are the ways of changing this and take the politics out of it.
Yeah. Well, and taking the politics out of it, though, is, I guess, arguably undemocratic because there are competing interests and the legislature has to deal with that. These are tough problems. It reminds me a lot of the elevation height issue we've explored on this program, because mm-hmm. there's people with different interests. There's economic interests. Your property taxes are too high. Well, then more development. More development, raise your tax base, and then maybe your tax won't increase. They probably won't go down. And, that's a tough policy issue. You want a view of the river. Well, does everybody get a view of the river? Will there actually be an improved view of the river if you go in the way they're programmed? And similarly here, without jobs and with crushing, grinding poverty, it'll have a dispiriting effect. We saw that when I came here, that the jobs for logging and the mills and the fishing industry had gone out, and it was a bleak place. It's coming back. But we need family wage jobs, and there are just too few of them. And so,
and a place for those folks to live, mm-hmm. and the services for them. No problem is in isolation. They all touch each other. And addressing one means you have to look at the others as well. Homelessness is part of that. The stereotype is that a homeless person doesn't have an opportunity to participate in society. Many of the homeless folks have jobs. They just have to live in the woods. Mm-hmm. And so they need the assistance to get there, or we're just like greenhouse gases. We're just burying our head in the sand and not wanting to address it.
And by getting there, you don't mean to the woods. You mean to a better lifestyle, to a residence.
Right.
Yeah, these are tough issues. I just can't remember a time where there have been tougher problems, and I'm sort of a student of history. So, well, I guess that'll wrap it up for our call-ins today. Thanks, everybody, all two of you, the three of you that called in, and maybe we bit off more than we could chew. I don't know. But I think in the near future, I'm going to have Brian Kidder back here to come on and help us sort out what the proposals are for the PERS issue, because 80 cents of every dollar for a new revenue for our schools is going to pay off PERS and not going to improving the schools and dealing with the class sizes and texts and teacher improvement. So that's a big issue that's coming up. So I'd like to thank Brian Kidder for coming on the conversation. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, John. And reminder to people to vote when your ballot comes in. We actually have an election on May 21st.
We sure do. Okay. Thanks again, Brian. And so let's take it out here. We're coming up on the hour of 10 o'clock. This is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you miss this broadcast, you can't call in, but you can listen to it. It's available at our website, coastradio.org. Go to podcasts, not codcasts, but podcasts, and you can listen to the program. Next week, we'll have another topic for you here on Conversation with John Orr. Thanks to KMUN for hosting this public affairs program.